The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on what is the most perfect day in Auburn Opelika. Sun is shining, not a cloud in the sky. A little bit windy, but that's okay. We won't complain all that much on just another beautiful day here on the plains. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Back to our normal Thursday routine. This time last week, we were out at Plaza Bar and Lounge for a remote. We had so much fun with that, and so we shook up the schedule a little bit for that, but back to normal today. We'll have Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. He'll join us at 2:30 here in hour number one. And then Chris Gordy will be back with us this week from Locked On SEC. He'll be with us in hour number two. We'll talk all things SEC basketball, a couple of teams competing in the Sweet 16 this weekend, hopefully the Elite Eight, it may be more. We'll also talk SEC baseball and SEC spring football. Some tons of news around the conference with that transfer portal. I mean, it's wide open around the SEC. So Chris Gordy will join us coming up in hour number two. Happy opening day for MLB, huh? Happy opening day. It is wild that we are already here for the Major League Baseball season. I know high school is, I mean, halfway through it already, and college is in conference play, but I mean, March just flew by. I mean, it's crazy. Monday's April 1st. Did you know that? Monday is a new month. And March has come and gone, it seems like. But happy opening day to all of you that celebrate. You've got the Braves going off today and this weekend, and the Red Sox going off today. That's my team. Y'all know that. I love the Braves. They're my number two, but I am a huge Red Sox fan. And so excited for another season of disappointment when it comes to the Red Sox. And hopefully the Braves can do something and kind of bounce back a little bit. So, hey, update on that, by the way. The Braves are in Philly this weekend to start their opening series for the season. And on Saturday, we're going to have that game for you right here on ESPN 106.7. So if you're looking for something to listen to Saturday afternoon, tune in. We'll have the Braves for you right here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader on the national ESPN broadcast. So really, really excited for that. Phone lines are open today, 334-321-1390. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about today on this Thursday afternoon? We've got some baseball things to go over. We have some basketball things to go over, some football things to go over. I mean, just so much to talk about on the show today, and I want to hear from you. 334-321-1390. And you do have the Sweet 16 beginning tonight in college basketball. You have Clemson in Arizona, San Diego State and UConn, Alabama and North Carolina, and Illinois and Iowa State. And I went on with Doug earlier today and talked a little bit about this Sweet 16. And look, I think it's going to be fun. I really do. I just think that now that we are through those first couple of rounds where we knew it was going to be wild, we knew it was going to be hectic, and is it crazy to think that there weren't as many just massive upsets as we were expecting? I mean, the round of 32 was fairly chalk, right? I mean, most of the favorites won in the round of 32, and the round of 64 was insane. I mean, I'm pretty sure there were no perfect brackets after day one. I'm pretty sure, if not, there were a handful of them, and they lost pretty early in day two. But looking up and down the Sweet 16, I mean, look at it tonight. A 6 seed and a 2 seed, 5-1, 4-1, 3-2. And then tomorrow, in action, the one that stands out is NC State, the 11 seed. But they're going up against the 2 seed, then a 5-1, a 4-1, and a 3-2. So you really only have two outliers. Clemson at 6 and NC State at 11. But Clemson at 6 in the Sweet 16 doesn't seem all that crazy to me. Clemson seems crazy to me, but a 6 seed doesn't. There's really only one in NC State where you're like, wow, nobody had them going this far. Or maybe you did. Maybe you rode the train of the Wolfpack after what they did in the ACC tournament. So I say all that to say this. It's all started to work itself out. And this is what it's supposed to do, right? This is what you're trying to do. You're trying to crown a national champion. You're trying to find the best team in college basketball for the year 23 and 24, for the season, right? And that's been my biggest argument, is I love the NCAA tournament. I do. I love it. It is my favorite time of the year because of the craziness, because of all the games, the hectic couple of days where we're following it from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. on 4 and 5 TVs all day long. Upset City, not a ton of buzzer beaters this year, right? There were a couple, but nothing overly crazy. That's when you think of March Madness, that's what you think of. You think of buzzer beaters from half court, and maybe we'll get some this weekend in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, but those, all of those things are what make it so much fun. But you know how I feel about this. It's not the proper way to crown the best team in the sports. And there are tons of different ways to do it. Do it like any other pro team does it, where you have a playoff, a true playoff system, where the best of the best get in and they compete. Sometimes it's a series. Sometimes it's a one-game thing, like it is in the NFL. But you could do a series like they do in the NBA or the MLB or the NHL. You could do that. You could do a playoff like college football is doing. Now, basketball is a little bit different because there are more teams that have a shot to win it all. And I think there's more teams that are better, I guess is what I'm trying to say, than there are in college football. But look at college baseball. Do it like that. There's different ways to make this work, but yet, are they really worried about crowning the best team? Do they really care about crowning the national champion? Or do they just want to see as many games as possible played? Because they're talking about making it even bigger, which is insane. They want to make it triple digits in the amount of teams that make it to the NCAA tournament. Can we think about that for a second? Do you really think that a team ranked outside the top 100 or in the top 100 deserves a true shot at winning a national championship? Because once you make it in the field, you've got a shot. You've got to be in it to win it. That's what they say about the lottery, right? It's the same thing with the NCAA tournament. And I'm going to pull up the net rankings. This was as of March 17th, so as of Selection Sunday. And I'm going to go down, and I'm going to tell you the 100th team in the net rankings. Do you know who that is? That's the Georgia Bulldogs, a team we talked about yesterday with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, a team that actually looks pretty solid in the NIT tournament, right? In the not-in-tournament tournament. But do we legitimately think that if the Georgia Bulldogs got into the NCAA tournament right now, that they would have a legitimate chance to make a national championship run? Give me a break, right? And I say all that to say this. I love the tournament. It's just not the best way to crown a champion. But you know what? It's not going anywhere, and I don't want it to. It's almost its own thing, right? It's a one-off situation where there's no college football playoff. There's no regionals and super regionals. There's no seven-game series or anything like that. It's just you get in or you don't, and you got to win 6 games in a row against teams you've never seen and fly all over the country to do it. And it's been that way forever, and it's not going anywhere. And the fun side of it is the games that we get, like tonight. How about Clemson, Arizona? Most people will write Clemson off and think Arizona will roll in this game. They should. They absolutely should. Doesn't mean they will. Arizona favored by 6.5 points tonight. Seems like a decent line. I probably wouldn't touch it because I don't know. I'm waiting on Arizona to do what they do best and fall on their face in the NCAA tournament. San Diego State and UConn. How about a rematch of last year's national championship game? Now, these two teams are different than they were a year ago. UConn more than San Diego State. But UConn's a really good team. And there's a reason they had the best betting odds coming into this thing to win it all again. And that's still looking like a pretty good bet at this point. With what? 16 Elite Eight Final Four Championship. Four rounds to go? Yeah, they're still looking like one of the best teams and best bets to win the national title. They're favored by double digits tonight over San Diego State. 11.5 points. That's wild to me. Because that's a San Diego State team that plays hardcore defense, turns you over, and limits possessions. But UConn's 33-3 this year. That's really good. That's really, really good. And Dan Hurley is doing some serious things up in Connecticut. I'll take UConn tonight. I'll take Arizona to win the game. Not that I necessarily want them to. I'd love to pick the Clemson Tigers for my boss Steve Witten, but I can't do it. I got to take Arizona, and I'll take UConn as well. We're going to loop back to the Alabama-North Carolina game. Illinois-Iowa State, it's going to go one of two ways, and I think this is how it's going to go. I think it's going to be so ugly and so boring and so sloppy that it's going to be entertaining because it'll be close and tight all the way through. And it's going to be a 1-2 possession game within the last minute or two. That's just that's my prediction here. And Vegas seems to feel that way also, with Iowa State being favored by just 1.5. I don't know where this game's going. Illinois, they're so boring. They are. They're not a fun team to watch. And Iowa State has kind of been in that realm too, where they're not playing great, but they're barely getting by, are the Cyclones of Iowa State. Look at their last two games of the tournament. They beat Baylor 76-72, okay. And then, oh wait, hold on, that's the regular season. Well, they didn't have those pulled up. Iowa State in their two games in the tournament were not pretty. I'm getting it pulled up right now. Here we go. South Dakota State, 82-65, all right. Then they had to squeeze by Washington State, 67-56. And that was not a pretty game if you watched it. That's an ugly score, 67-56. Both of these teams play defense, and neither one of these teams are elite offensively. The total's not great, and the spread is extremely thin. The total is 146.5. Yikes. That's more than I thought it was going to be honest with you. I'll take the Cyclones for absolutely no reason. I don't know. I think they're the better team. That's about all I got for you in terms of who I think is going to win and why. But then you do have Alabama and North Carolina tonight. And Doug and I talked about this earlier. The Tide's playing with house money. The Tide have nothing to lose. Alabama has nothing to lose tonight. They've done everything they were supposed to. And we've talked about that team all year long. The potential was sky high. They were good enough offensively to make a run to the Final Four. I believe that, and I still do. But their defense is atrocious. Their defense is historically some of the worst we've ever seen. And yet here they are in the Sweet 16 with a chance to move on to yet another Elite Eight. And they have to go through the number one team in their bracket, the North Carolina Tar Heels, who I told you yesterday is top 30 in offensive scoring in the country. They're also really good defensively. They hold teams to 70 points a game. There's a chance they're probably not going to do that tonight against Alabama. But there's a chance Alabama could give up 100. Because North Carolina has size. North Carolina has experience. And North Carolina's got some serious dudes on that team that I don't think Alabama can run with. Can they hang around? Sure. Because a 10-12 point lead over this Alabama team means pretty much nothing. Whatever your lead is, subtract 10. And if you're not leading at that point, then you're not leading Alabama because of how quick they can come back and just how explosive they are offensively because of what they do behind the three-point line and what they do in transition and how quick their offensive possessions go. Whether it's a three, whether it's a jumper, whether it's a layup or a dunk, they don't waste time. You'd think they'd get tired from running up and down the floor all day and playing so much defense because They get down there and don't play a whole lot of offense because the possession is over just like that. But Alabama has no expectations at this point. And if you're an Alabama fan and you get like angry that Alabama loses tonight, if that's how it goes, and I mean angry as in Auburn fan angry how they've been since Friday, then you got to reconsider a little bit. Because nobody was picking Alabama to make the Elite Eight realistically. They had potential to, sure. But nobody was picking Alabama to go to the Elite Eight and think they were good enough on all cylinders and all facets of the game to get there, especially going through North Carolina to do it. So if they do, good for you. Great. And if not, guess what? You had another great season if you're Alabama. And you have another Sweet 16 year to put on a banner inside of Coleman Coliseum. And that's something Auburn can't do. That's something that Auburn is not able to say. So take that and run with it if you're Alabama and an Alabama fan. Taking on North Carolina tonight. Tar Heels favored by 4.5. I think if they play well, they can beat Alabama by 7 or 8. But again, I think Alabama can win. I'm going to take the Tar Heels, but I don't feel good about it. I don't feel good about it at all. But I'll take North Carolina to beat the Crimson Tide tonight. 334-321-1390. Come on in, be a part of it here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. We'll take our first break, come back, and continue talking after this here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
All right, back inside the studio here at ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Just a beautiful day in Auburn, Alabama. So much going on in the world of sports. I talked about Major League Baseball opening day. How about that, huh? It's finally here. My Red Sox playing late tonight. They'll be out in Seattle taking on the Mariners for their opening day game. And then looks like rained out the Braves in their first game. So they'll play a doubleheader tomorrow in Philadelphia. So you have to wait another day for the Bravos to open up the season. Angels and Orioles going on right now. You've got Tigers and White Sox, Twins and Royals. How about this? Yankees and Astros to get the season underway. That'll be exciting. Pirates and Marlins, Giants, Padres, Cardinals and Dodgers, Blue Jays and Rays, Nationals, Reds, Cubs, Rangers, Guardians and Athletics, Rockies, Diamondbacks, and looks like there was a rain delay and a postponement of the Brewers and the Mets. Look, I'm excited for Major League Baseball. It's a lot of fun. I know a lot of people, I'm pretty sure Bill and Dan do it, and I've been invited to a couple of them to do fantasy baseball, and I've done it before. I've done fantasy basketball before. I've even done fantasy hockey before. You know me, I'm a big hockey guy. But, man, it's a lot for me to keep up with. I'm going to be really honest. Does anybody here play fantasy, like, the baseball or basketball or hockey? Like, the true daily fantasy stuff? Because credit to you, man. I enjoy playing fantasy, but also, like, playing fantasy football where I can get on and manage my team and my roster for like, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes for the week and then just be done with it. And I know that I have either Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday to do it. When it comes to the baseball and NBA and NHL, like, man, that's a lot. That is every single day looking through every single game and every single roster and starting lineup, which, it's crazy because I do a lot of that anyway, just being a sports guy and doing sports talk radio. But, man, you add in that extra fantasy aspect of it, and it's just, I don't know, it's just not my thing. And working all the time and being busy and running around like crazy, I find where if you miss a day, you get behind, and then it's easy to get even farther behind, and then you're just done for. So, I don't know. I'm not into like the season, the long everyday fantasy games. I'm more of a football guy where, like I said, I can get on, do it for like 10 or 15 minutes and then just be done with it. But I'm excited for Major League Baseball to officially be back. And look, I think for those of you that are Braves fans, expectations are pretty high. Once again, as they should be for this Braves team, and hopefully we can start getting Lindsey Crosby back in here, our baseball guru, baseball guy in here, talking some Auburn baseball and Major League Baseball as well. And again, I can't believe that opening day is finally here. But want to also talk about something that Bruce Pearl had to say when it comes to Auburn basketball. He came out in defense, and he had his season-ending press conference today. And we've got that audio. We may play that maybe today, maybe tomorrow, not really sure. But Bruce Pearl spoke up today. He spoke up today about those coming out and not necessarily slandering, but attacking is a word that he kind of used. On fans and media and sports talk people coming out against Chad Baker Mazzara. And he came out and he said, basically he was tired of it. Here's the quote he said. Bruce Pearl in his presser today said he's taken responsibility for it. He's taken responsibility for it, although the consequences were really, really significant. I'm just going to tell the Auburn family, while I know you're disappointed, if somebody was messing with your son, you'd stand up for your son a little bit, wouldn't you? Stop messing with my son. Stop it. He apologized. He made a mistake. And I'm calling you out. I'm not having it. For those on social media that want to continue, unfollow those people. Stop it. That's what Bruce Pearl said today about this whole situation where the round of 64 loss to Yale in the NCAA tournament, where a lot of people have gone after Chad Baker, not personally, but because of what happened, because of the action that he did and the consequences that came thereafter and the impact that it had on the game. Because we can all agree, we've talked about it since Friday. It had a huge effect on the outcome of the game. We've all said it. Auburn wins that game by 20 if Chad Baker Mazzara is there and never gets ejected. The argument still stands that Auburn should have done it. They should have won without him, sure. And I think we can all agree that this was something we've seen coming for months. But I understand where Bruce is coming from, and good for him. Credit to Bruce Pearl for coming out and pushing back a little bit against, I'll be honest, guys like me, guys like you, fans. He specifically said the Auburn family is who he was talking to and saying, cut it out. And at this point, he's right. At this point right now, yes, he is right. We turned the page yesterday here on the show. And I think it is time for fans to turn that page as well. Because the season's over. This is what I said yesterday. The season's over. There's nothing we can do. There's nothing Bruce Pearl can do. There's nothing Chad Baker Mazzara can do. There's nothing you can do. We've got to find ways to move on and figure out how to avoid it. But in the moment, and for the first couple of days, it's okay for people to be upset. It's not okay for people to go after him personally or attack him or family members if that's what was happening, anything like that. That's never okay in sports or in life. It's never okay. But again, nobody's above criticism here. That was an action that deserved to be criticized. It has been. He served his punishment in the game. Auburn then proceeded to lose the game after that, and the season ended right then and there. But credit to Bruce Pearl for coming to bat for his guys, which is something we've known about Bruce Pearl his entire career. That's why guys love playing for him. That's why guys love coming to play for Auburn. Because they know that Bruce Pearl's got their back. He's in their corner. And it's unfortunate that at times they've got to defend themselves against the fan base, but that's how sports work. That's how sports work. Fans talk, media talks, personalities talk. We all do it. But here's the thing, don't do things like that, and people won't criticize you. But it's never okay to go after a person personally for something that happens on the field, the court, or whatever. When we come back, we'll have Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. He'll join us. We'll talk about everything going on around Auburn Athletics after this on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. I'm Jacob Goins with you on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7, and excited to have this guy back on the show. He's with us every single Thursday at 2:30. He's with the Auburn Sports Network, and his name is Brad Law. He's with us on the phone lines. Brad, it is a gorgeous day here on the plains, and so many things are happening around Auburn Athletics.
Heck yeah, man. We're glad to be back with you. Glad to be I'm glad it's gorgeous in Auburn. It's gorgeous in College Station, too, and it'll look a lot better if Auburn can grab a couple of wins here this weekend.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a tall task, something that Auburn is no stranger to when it comes to the opening few series of SEC baseball play, and that's where we'll start. Auburn was home this past weekend. They had the number one team in the country, and they dropped the first two of a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series, but bounced back on Saturday in front of a record crowd at Plainsman Park. Walk us through the weekend.
Well, yeah, I think they went toe-to-toe with the number one team in the country, and they had 2 1-run losses in the first two games of that series. They were decided by, the first game was 1-0, and it was decided on a first-inning solo home run. The second game was decided by a 9th-inning solo home run. So, you know, for what, the middle 16 innings, everything was dead even with the number one team in the country. And then it was Auburn that got a 3-run homer and won by 2. So a plus 3 home run and a plus 2 final score in the finale against Arkansas. You know, that was just a series where you felt like those teams could play 50 games or 51 games maybe, and one team would win 26 and the other win 25. I mean, I think that's how Auburn comes out of that weekend. And now they come on the road to Texas A&M. They'll face two more left-handed starters with really good numbers to start the year in Texas A&M, a team that was perfect before conference play started. And just another, you know, in this league, again, you don't really have peaks and valleys. Your competition is top-notch every weekend out, and that's the case again here this weekend.
Have you seen anything from this team since SEC play started where they've gotten better, whether it be as simple as plate appearances or just minor things or, I mean, anything that you've seen while calling games for the Auburn Sports Network? I know it's been only two series, but two big-time series and a couple of midweek games as well. Anything that you've seen kind of progress with this Auburn squad so far?
Sure. I think one thing that comes to mind, maybe the biggest thing that stands out, is Ike Irish behind the plate. He had not thrown out any base runners until about 3 weeks ago. And it's not necessarily that it coincides with the start of SEC play, but that's about the time that it started. He's thrown out 4 or 5 base runners in the last 2 to 3 weeks. And that's partly on Ike. It's partly on the pitchers, too. They have worked on cutting down their time to home plate. So from the time they start their motion to the time the pitch gets there, Auburn's pitchers were averaging like 1.6 seconds to the plate, and now they're in the 1.4 neighborhood. Or if they were averaging 1.5, now they're down to 1.3 or 1.2. That makes a difference now when you talk about throwing a guy out at second base, because we all know how close those plays are. And so a fraction of a second makes a difference. And so that's one of the areas that I've seen, both the pitchers and Ike himself in cutting down base runners that has really kind of come on the scene here in the last 2 to 3 weeks.
And Brad, you're in College Station, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what can you tell us about this A&M team? I know you alluded to it a little bit, but I mean, number 4 ranked team in the country. It never stops for this Auburn schedule with Vanderbilt, Arkansas, A&M, and then just Tennessee next weekend. So what can you tell us a little bit of detail about this A&M squad that Auburn's going to see for a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series once again?
Yeah, and if you look, that Tennessee team is, I think, 2-4 in league play because it's the SEC and there are no breaks. This A&M team is, I think, 3-3 in the league because there are no breaks. There just are no breaks in the SEC. A&M is led by two left-handed pitchers, Ryan Prager, who we'll see tonight, who has a sub-1.7 earned run average. And then the middle starter is a righty. The Saturday starter, the Game 3 starter, is Justin Lampkin. He is a left-hander with a sub-1.7 earned run average. So lefties with good stuff have been, you're going to see one every weekend out in the SEC. It was Holton for Vanderbilt. It was Hagan Smith for Arkansas. And this weekend, Auburn will see a couple of these guys. And Ryan Prager tonight, righties are only hitting 156 against their left-handed starter. You take that, that's the pitching side of things. And then on the offensive side, they have three offensive players who are accounting for almost half of their RBIs on the year. They have 205 RBIs. Literally 100 of those come from three players offensively. Jace Lavallette, who has been there for a couple of years now, and he's established. They have a freshman who we'll talk about more as the game goes on tonight, who has kind of surprised people by not going pro and coming here to College Station to play college ball. And then Braden Montgomery, who, if Auburn fans followed very closely 2 years ago when they played Stanford in the College World Series, Montgomery was Stanford's big, powerful right fielder. And he transferred after 2022 to College Station. So he's a guy originally from Texas. Those three guys together have 100 of A&M's 205 RBIs.
That's insane.
So, yeah, kind of a three-headed offensive monster. Their lineup is top-heavy, I think, and their pitching has been very, very good. I will say this. I'm curious to see. Auburn has the number one, plays the toughest schedule in the country. All of your strength of schedule metrics have Texas A&M in the 60 to 75 range. And now that conference play has gotten underway, they've come back down to earth a little bit. Does that continue? That's the big question here this weekend.
How many times do we say with Auburn athletics teams that they play the hardest schedule in the country? I mean, it seems like it's every season with every team and every sport that it's, well, Auburn's playing one of the top five toughest schedules in the country, but when it comes to SEC baseball, there's no avoiding that.
No, there is, and that's, I expect to see the strength of schedule metrics all, like, everybody's number is going to rise when they go through conference play because there just aren't breaks. And you look at some of the records early on in league play. I mentioned Tennessee to start with, and, you know, the fact that they have a sub-500 record their first two. I mean, where's your break?
Right.
Where's your break? Missouri is probably, you know, objectively, they're the worst team in the league. They struggled before. They have a new first-year coach. They're struggling. Who else can you look at in a week on a weekend? I mean, look at the matchups this weekend. It's ranked team versus ranked team. Mississippi State is back in the top 25 now. They've been absent the last couple of seasons. So, yeah, it's just that's the way it is, and you know it. This is not a oh, woe is us type of statement. It's just, man, you better get to a high level and stay there to compete in this league. That's just what's expected. That's to earn the seat at the table. And then whatever happens in the games, that's where you get to a situation like the Arkansas series last weekend where it's decided on two out of 595 pitches the first two games of the series and how you have a two-run game decided by a three-run homer in the third game. It's baseball. You're going to win about a third. You're going to lose about a third. What do you do with that third in the middle? You better be at a high level to be competitive in those third of your games.
Well, that's the beauty of the sport, Brad, and that's why we love it so much. It's why we talk about it. It's why guys like you and everybody at the Auburn Sports Network covers it and calls games all season long. You guys are in College Station for the Thursday, Friday, Saturday series, Auburn and Texas A&M. All of those can be found here locally in Auburn Opelika on Wings 94.3. You can also find those on the Auburn Tigers app as well. All night games, Brad, 6 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock here Central Time, so a Saturday night game in Aggieland.
Yeah, it means that the radio crew gets three lunch spots in College Station over the weekend, and we're excited about that. Already hit one of them today called The Proudest Monkey, which is a nice local burger place in Bryan.
So, okay.
No, it's good. Three, look, it means we get home very, very late Saturday night, or I guess technically early Easter Sunday morning, but that's okay. I like night games. I like them on the road. I'm not having to play the games, so just from a competitive, like, from the storytelling aspect, these are three great crowds we're going to see. Over 6,000 people in all three of these games. it's what it's supposed to be. Give me night games, big crowds, a great environment for high-level baseball.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun, and you guys are going to do such a wonderful job. Again, Auburn baseball at Texas A&M tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday. Locally, you can find those on Wings 94.3. We're talking with Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network with us here during the Thursday edition of On the Line. Got to flip to basketball for a few minutes here, Brad. The season obviously came to a close, the close that we were obviously not looking for, and fans have vocalized disappointment in since last Friday, and you and I have not had a chance to talk about it on the air. So put it into your words on what you saw in that game, the one lone game in the NCAA tournament, and kind of where Auburn basketball goes from here.
Yeah, I think let me get to my opinion on the second answer first, and that is I don't think anything changes. I mean, I think the trajectory is what it is. And every year now, Bruce Pearl has established that this program's expectations and realistic opportunities are what he says. You put yourself in position to be in position. You're going to have a shot at finishing the top three or four of the SEC every year. You're going to have a shot at a conference championship in the regular season, and you can be a realistic contender to win the SEC tournament championship. You have a shot at that every year. No reason that should change. Rosters are going to change and roll over, and that's normal in basketball. It's normal now in every sport, really. But you notice it more in basketball because three or four players is a third of your team.
Right.
So I don't think that changes. I think, you know, this team probably outperformed the expectations. They were picked sixth. They finished second. And I think next year's team will be projected top half with a realistic opportunity to finish at or very, very near the top again. As for the tournament game, obviously disappointed. I mean, I think that there's no one factor that plays into why the team lost. Turnovers were a part of it. But not the sole factor. Chad Baker-Mazzara not being available was a factor, but not the sole factor. Missing free throws, Yale missed them early, and Auburn made them early. Yale hit them late, and Auburn missed them late. So we noticed some more because they were missed later in the game, but they kind of evened out. I don't have a reason or an explanation. I just know it was disappointing because I think everybody sort of thought like this was Auburn's best chance to advance to the Sweet 16 or further. Maybe then even the team that went to the Final Four or that team with Jabari and Walker and that crew. And so it enhances the disappointment. But I don't think it takes away 4 months' worth of meaningful, real experiences, honors, championships, and so on and so forth, because Auburn was the 33rd 1-4 seed to lose their first game in the tournament in the last 10 years.
That's a heck of a stat, and it just shows where college basketball is right now, where you're seeing college athletics, where it's all kind of starting to even out a little bit with, you know, the mid-major teams becoming better and the Power Five teams having to find more talent and try to be better than those teams. And that's kind of what I was saying the other day, Brad, was this was a really fun team to watch. And I know it was a fun team to call with you and everybody at the Auburn Sports Network. I mean, this was a really, really fun team to be a part of this year.
Yeah, no question. And I'm glad that we, you know, the further away we get from the game, the less it stings. And I don't want to minimize it. Championships are important. Never would I ever claim that championships aren't important. But this team also did win a championship. And let's not minimize that. Jalen Williams becoming all-time winningest player in program history, the way this team liked each other. And they were really a close group. That doesn't need to be washed away or minimized. Those things aren't unimportant. And this was a lot of fun. This was a very, very fun team to watch and cover. And that's another reason why the loss is disappointing, because you felt like, you know, their four-month body of work was a little more deserving than to lose in the first round of the tournament. I don't want to take credit for that stat, by the way. Brian Matthews wrote an article a couple of days after the game that included that. 33 teams ranked 1-4 have lost their first game in the tournament over the last 10 NCAA tournaments. And, you know, it didn't do anything to diminish Virginia's program. It hasn't done anything to hurt Purdue, that's for sure. And those were one seeds that suffered these monumental, staggering upsets. Duke has lost multiple times as a top four seed their first round of the tournament. Hasn't he done anything to stagnate that program? Hasn't done anything to stagnate Kentucky's program. Now, there are things in place from a coaching perspective that have hurt Kentucky and the way they run their program that makes them susceptible to those, but it hasn't hurt the program itself. And I don't think, to kind of bring it full circle, losing that game doesn't do anything to impact Auburn's program negatively, big picture.
No, and kind of on a smaller scale, just means the regular season and the postseason, the whole season comes to an end a little bit quicker, and Auburn can begin to manage their roster. We've seen that happen already, and it will continue to happen over the next several weeks as Auburn basketball out of the NCAA tournament. I know the women's team made it to the tournament as well, and they got their first four round and played Arizona. They fell a little bit short as well. So basketball season is in the rearview mirror, but man, it is baseball, softball season, and we couldn't be happier about that. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, live from College Station, taking the time to talk to us today. We appreciate you, man. Always a good time to talk to you. Plug everything. Tell people how they can find the broadcast coming up this weekend.
You got it. Baseball starting tonight. Andy Burcham and I are on the call. I was really hoping to put, you know, one more basketball note. The fact that basketball is out means Andy is here. We do like that, but obviously we all wanted me to be doing this weekend solo because it meant that Andy was still with basketball. But as it is, no, I'm joining Andy on the call tonight starting at 5:45 on Wings, 5:45 tomorrow night on Wings, 6:45 Saturday night on Wings. And as you listen to the radio, if you want to go to War Eagle Plus on your phone and check out the In the Booth cam, we'll also have Andy's face on the In the Booth cam this weekend.
I mean, what can beat that?
Nothing. That's, you know, not the best brisket in Texas, that's for sure. So that's a fun second screen experience while you listen to the games on Wings 94.3.
Awesome, man. Hey, you guys, I say it all the time. You all do just a wonderful job. We're so honored and happy to be partnered with you guys, and have a safe trip back and enjoy the weekend at College Station. Get some great food and bring home a couple of wins.
We plan to. Thank you very much, Jacob. Appreciate it. War Eagle.
That's Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network. He's with us every Thursday here at 2:30 on ESPN 106.7. This is On the Line. I'm Jacob Golds. We'll take our final break, come back, wrap up hour number one. Phone lines are still open. Now, or I guess opening up back now, huh? Since Brad's no longer with us. Phone lines are open again, 334-321-1390. We'll take our final break, come back, wrap up hour number one, hop into hour number two. Reminder, Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC will join us coming up later on in hour number two as well. Back after this to wrap up hour number one on the other side.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. I'm Jacob Goins with you on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Big shout out and thank you to Brad Law joining us. I forgot we had boots on the ground in College Station. I guess my mind's still set on basketball but Brad was traveling for the baseball anyway, so it just makes sense that he was in College Station. So we appreciate him joining us, taking some time and talking to us about a lot of Auburn baseball. Good conversation there. How about A&M? Three guys have combined for 100 of their, 205 RBIs? That's insane. That's absurd for college baseball. So when Brad says that their lineup is top-heavy, yeah, I think that's pretty fair to say. And so Auburn taking on the number 4 ranked team in the country on the road tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday on the air at 5:45 tonight, 5:45 tomorrow, and 6:45 on Saturday. And as he said, and I mentioned it a few times, you can find that on our sister station next door on Wings 94.3. He also had some things to say about basketball, and look, as we continue talking about this, and we've got news, right, Katie Johnson going into the portal and Bruce Pearl coming out today in defense of Chad Baker-Mazzara, and understandably so, the loss is still disappointing, but where do you go from here? That's what everybody's trying to figure out, is where do you go from here? And, you know, and here's what Bruce Pearl had to say, too. He said, I knew right there we were in trouble. He said, I knew right there because they had one great defender and we thought they had put that defender on Chad and therefore our point guards would have some freedom to do more things. So Bruce Pearl knew, right, as soon as it happened with CBM that, yeah, this was going, that game got a lot tougher with Chad Baker-Mazzara not being there. And it wasn't just from a scoring perspective. It was from like this, like the details of basketball, the matchups and the length and the size and all those things that people don't think about all the time, but coaches have to. Those things affected and impacted the game and the team. But as Brad was saying, we've seen big-time teams lose before early in the tournament. How did they respond? Look at Purdue and how they're responding this year. Can Auburn do that next year? Look at what Virginia did. Look at what other teams do when they get beat early the year before. They come back with a vengeance. And that starts with your head coach. That starts with Bruce Pearl. And I think that's what every Auburn fan wants in this offseason and moving forward into the next basketball season. Hour number one is in the books. Hour number two coming up. We'll have Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. He'll join us in the back end of hour number two. Would love to hear from you on this Thursday afternoon. 334-321-1390. Hour number two coming up.
Production. You are on the line. Live on ESPN 1067, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 1067 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 1067, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on another beautiful day in the Auburn Opelika area. Hour number two is underway here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go and catch up with the podcast. We'll post that right after the show today. You can find it at ESPNAU.com or just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. Talk to Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network in the first hour. He is live on location in College Station as he is on the call tonight with Andy Burcham for the weekend for Auburn baseball as they take on the number four team in the country, the Texas A&M Aggies. So they are in there. We talked to Auburn baseball, talked some basketball as well. So excited to see the Tigers in action tonight. Listen to the Tigers in action tonight as well. And so we had that interview in hour number one. Also talked a little Sweet 16 action, as we got games beginning tonight, so we'll have some more of that for you in hour number two. Chris Gordy from Locked On SEC is going to join us later on in this hour as well, so excited to talk to him. All things Southeastern Conference, basketball, baseball, football, transfer portal, whatever. I mean, there's so much going on around the conference right now, so that'll be coming up at the bottom of the hour. But with no phone calls, I'd like to play Bruce Pearl's presser from today. This is from today, his season-ending press conference, where we mentioned Chad Baker Mazzara comments, but a lot of other things in there as well. So this is Bruce Pearl and his season-ending press conference from earlier today.
Well, I'd be preferring, rather than doing a sort of season-ending press conference here in Auburn, I'd rather be doing some sort of a press conference prior to a game against UConn in Boston. But it didn't work out that way. We're still, you know, feel the sting and the pain of not performing well enough in the postseason to advance. And yet we all know that, you know, 67 teams are going to lose sometimes before they want to. I've been on the other side of that upset. So I know that's what March Madness is all about. That's what makes the tournament so exciting and so special and so rare. In spite of losing Chad Baker Mazzara to a flagrant 2, 3 minutes into the game, when you're up 10 with 7 to go, we're in pretty good spot. We turned the ball over on a number of occasions, and most of the stuff we turned it over on were stuff that you would take. Like the three of them I can recall, you know, we got the ball into Janai really tight, and he got stripped, you know. or Jalen Williams on a duck in, he dribbled it off his foot. We've seen him make that play a million times. Denver came off a double stagger, got his jersey held, and they got fouled. They didn't call it, but and it turned the ball over. Trey throws it away going backdoor to KD on a play that was really not designed for the backdoor. It was designed to get KD to block to set a back screen, and it was just not – we just didn't execute. KD got a rebound and pushed the break and turned the ball over, not being the point guard, and we've seen it before. And you know, it's sort of just a lot of the mistakes were – Some of the stuff that read their ugly head that, you know, have happened over a period of time that just kind of sort of the perfect storm. On the other end, they either score or got fouled every time. And so it was, you know, very, very difficult. The fact that we could lose to Yale, the fact that we did lose to Yale, and I think one of the things I've been really careful about both in my post-game comments as well as try to be careful today is – by providing too many excuses, I take away from what Coach said was, you know, the greatest, you know, maybe the greatest win in Yale basketball history, that we were the best team that they'd maybe had ever beaten. And I believe him. So to provide too many excuses takes away from the fact that they made shots and they made plays and they made their free throws and had a historic upset. You know, I made the comment after the game, I'll make it again. You know, I thought that the flagrant two could have been a flagrant one, and I don't think a whole lot of people would have commented on it. That it could it have been a flagrant two? Yes, it could have been. But 3 minutes into the game, when there really wasn't anything that where we were having any problems on the floor with, you know, temperatures rising or things like that, I knew right there we had trouble. We were in trouble. I mean, I knew right there because they had one great defender, and we thought that they'd put that defender on Chad, and therefore our point guards would have some freedom to do a few more things. But when we lost Chad and they had one great defender on our point guards, the only playmaking guard I really had left was Denver, and he did a great job. Denver did a phenomenal job. But it, you know, there was a reason why Chad Baker was – SEC All Tournament team. He was one of the best players in postseason in the SEC. I thought the fact that it was retaliatory, that 5 seconds earlier Chad Baker got hit in the throat on a flagrant play that was missed, should have been taken into consideration. And I just thought the finality of you know, you work all year long to put yourself in that position, and then on a judgment call, remove him from the game, I just thought it was too excessive. At the same time, on the other side of the coin, we're handling that with total accountability. Chad made a mistake. He should have never done it. He should have walked away. There were several times during the course of the season where he made the same mistake. And so what a really difficult way to learn from that mistake. At the same time, I would also like to remind our fans that and anybody listening that Chad owned up to that mistake, and he's apologized for that mistake, and he's taken responsibility for it, and although the consequences were, you know, really, really significant, and he feels really bad, and he's struggling with that right now. So I'm just going to tell the Auburn family, while I know you're disappointed, okay, if somebody was messing with your son, you'd just got to stand up for your son a little bit, wouldn't you? Stop messing with my son. Stop it. He apologized. He made a mistake. I'm calling you out. I'm not having it. For those on social media that want to continue, unfollow those people. Stop it. And part of it, what happens is, we get so excited as fans. My goodness gracious, this was a team that we enjoyed watching as much as anybody. It's a really fun team to watch. This was a team that was not a preseason top 25 team. I never said that. I thought this was a good team that had a chance to be very good. It turned out to be a very good chance with the team and a chance to be great. Iowa State and Auburn were the only two teams that got into the top 10 that weren't picked in a top 10 or top 25, which tells you that I think this team worked really, really hard. The fact that we could lose to Yale speaks volumes about the 27 games that we did win. Probably at Appy State, maybe Kentucky at home, but it's they played so very, very well. This team beat the teams they were supposed to beat almost every night. And for that, I compliment them, and for that, I'm proud of them because they prepared, and they trained, and they worked hard, and they played well together, and obviously they were unselfish. And so it was a great season. They won a championship, the fourth team in 7 years, the fourth different team in 7 years to win a championship in the SEC. SEC championships matter. They matter to me. I think they matter to our fans. I think they matter to the Auburn family. And I don't know that anybody over the last 7 years in the SEC can say that they've won, four different teams have won championships. So at the end of the day, if that's not good enough, I don't know what is. And our guys are a little sensitive to it. And here's the last thing. I'm not asking anybody to kiss my ass. Okay? I'm not. You want to write good things or say good things? Great. I hope I'll work really hard to earn those things. And I will, at some point, and maybe it's in the future, maybe it's in the past, I'll give you reason to criticize. You want to criticize the Yale game? Criticize the Yale game. Let's tear it up. Let's ask questions about the Yale game. I'll try to explain why we lost that lead. That's, have at it. But this was a great team at Auburn. And I'm very proud of them. Questions?
BP, I feel like you're having to defend the work that you've done at Auburn. Is that kind of what you're doing right now? Because that seems crazy to me. I mean, you've won a lot, like you said.
Yeah. Well, I think what happens is people get disappointed because their expectations change, and they should change. The expectations for Auburn basketball should be way higher than they were 10 years ago.
I guess a little bit forward-looking, I know we don't know entirely what's going to happen yet in terms of just roster movement, but you talked so much kind of before the season about how you took a different transfer portal approach, kind of looking to build the depth with this team. Do you kind of want to recreate that with next season's roster? Kind of what is your approach to this offseason?
There's no advantage in being 64 years old right now and having done this since 1978. You know, it's completely different. We got beat and we got home Saturday morning at 4:30 in the morning, right from Montgomery. My staff and I were in the office at 10, and I had to set an alarm to get up and get in at 10 o'clock. And we worked Saturday and Sunday evaluating what's in the portal, what we thought might be coming in the portal, our own team. And would you be shocked to know that I've been on the road recruiting Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday? I just got back late last night, and I'm leaving in about an hour. So it's changed. We're obviously not in control of everything. I mean, the idea, the combination of the NIL and the transfer portal and the automatic eligibility right away, it's just, that is uncharted waters for all of us. An NIL agent could literally call any player on my roster and offer them some sort of an NIL deal somewhere else, and it's no longer tampering. I can tell you we're not going to do that. Just because it's legal, I promise you, we're not doing that. And I'll fire a guy that ever tries to do it. That's just not what I believe in. But we don't have to. You don't have to do it that way. So we met with almost all the players and gave almost all the players the opportunity to meet and things like that, see where they're at. And I feel really good about our meetings. I want to congratulate KD on 3 years of being in the NCAA tournament, of a regular season championship, of a tournament championship. It's a pretty good 3-year run. It really is. What I anticipated in my meetings with KD was that our roster in the backcourt, particularly with Denver Jones returning, it's going to be about a little bit more of the same for KD. In other words, coming off the bench, not quite being able to be play as freely as he would have liked to play. There's just only so many minutes, only so much opportunity. And then with a chance of perhaps having a lot of other guys back who are also really good, you know, we just talked about the fact that would the joy of the game be more if perhaps he was someplace else and had more of an opportunity to do more of what KD does. And so our discussion was really, really good. KD Johnson will return to Auburn to receive his degree when the time comes. He's really close to his degree, and he perhaps could go someplace else and maybe get that degree in this next year, but he really wants to be a unit short. He wants an Auburn degree. So does his family. So when he's done playing wherever he goes and plays, you know, we're going to make that happen.
Bruce, you talked about really liking this past year's team. When you sort of visualize building next year's team, how much of this year's team do you want to see in that team, and what are some things maybe you want to be a little different?
That's a great question. Look, we had between Dylan Carwell and Janai Broome and Jalen Williams and Chaney Johnson, man, those four guys gave us as good a front line as we would play against. And we pound that ball inside of those guys, and they did inside-out things. And I think with all four of those guys, you know, Jalen Williams was all-conference finally, right? Janai Broome was an All-American. And again, you know, you talk about progress. You talk about player development. Let's talk about player development. You know, Janai Broome starts at Morehead State, and he goes there as a freshman. He's not very heavily recruited. No Power 5 offers. And he just goes down there and is the player of the year down there. You know, and then his sophomore year, they lead him some championships, and has two great years. Now he's at Auburn. Will his game translate? Can he play? Is he athletic enough, fast enough? Can he go in the SEC? All he does is be all-conference in the SEC first year. You know, take us to the second round. And then comes back and really wanted to be an All-American really badly. I think the combination of him, his efficiencies, he improved from two, he improved from three, he improved at the foul line, he improved his assist turnover ratio, he improved defensively. And as a result of his improvement and us finishing the regular season, you know, ranked in the top 10, he was one over a handful of guys that weren't on the preseason All-American team that was on the postseason, I mean, at the end of the year. Again, progress, work. Not crowned, but again, with a chip on his shoulder. Not the preseason all league guy, but when the thing was over. So very, very, very proud of Janai. And Dylan, if he played more, either Janai Broome or Dylan Caldwell could have been the defensive player of the year in my mind. And then when Jalen Williams gets hurt, and all of a sudden Chaney Johnson's role changes, boom, we go to Georgia, and he's lights out, and he plays really well down the stretch the rest of the season. Those four guys, we had the advantage on the front line almost every night. And with the exception of Jalen Williams, who was a top 75 high school player, Dylan Carwell wasn't. Chaney Johnson wasn't. Janai Broome wasn't. And the McDonald's All-Americans. Not even Burger King. No. And so as a coach, as a teacher, and somebody that wants to like talk about Auburn, that's, to me, man, those guys have worked really hard and been loyal to Auburn. And so, you know, we'll see what comes back there, you know. Love to have them all back. And if we can, we could have another dominating front line next year. But that's still got to work itself out. You know, we just won't know.
Another thing to kind of work at point guard, when you bring Tahad in, you had two young guys coming back. Is that Is that kind of the thing that you just need to sort itself out? Like, how are y'all approaching this at this point in the offseason?
It's a really good time, a really good question. Tahad's not a point guard. This is what – he's got the size of a point guard. But everybody kind of assumes that Tahad was going to come in and be our point guard. He's not. Tahad is a scorer. He is an incredible athlete. He is he can make plays on both ends of the floor. He's going to be one of the fastest, quickest, most explosive little guards I've ever had. But he's not a true point guard. Now, can he play some? He might, but I actually think early in his career, I think I'm going to try to play him off the ball and let him do what he do. Get buckets. Right? Get buckets. Which may help you understand why the roster's moved in the position it's moved a little bit now. So, yeah.
Bruce, when it comes to Jahni, it seems like maybe that's a situation you guys would want to know about quickly because the guys you're looking at in the portal, is that sort of an accurate assessment of the conversations you're having with them?
You know, I want to let the guys make these decisions when they and their families are comfortable making these decisions. Obviously, the sooner they make them, the better, you know. And for both, I think, them and the program moving forward.
We were talking earlier about recruiting and just how different everything is. There's a lot of talk in football about like changing the calendar and all that. Is how tough is it for y'all, like when y'all look at the portal and y'all are at the SEC tournament and guys are already getting in and all that? Like, is that something that you're really wanting to see change just because of the timing of everything?
Well, I don't know what influence that I have over change. I love the one-time transfer exception. I think it's fine. Look, guys, if you followed my career, I've always had transfers sit out. Like, I love when transfers come in and sit out and get, and then the following year they're ready to go. You know, Samir Dowdy was a good example of that. 2018, we had a terrific power forward, 64 years old. Man, my name's messed up. I don't think that you should, sometimes sitting out gets looked at like a penalty. Sometimes in sitting out and you're working on your body and you're working on your game and you're working on your academics, you're really not sitting out. You're just not playing. But now what we obviously have created with this, with the transfer thing, is at the end of every year, you know, everybody can stay and everybody can leave. And there's just no order to it. One great thing about being at Auburn, guys like it here. They appreciate the opportunity to play here. They love their school. They love the jungle. They love and appreciate the support they get. So in this crazy world of NIL and portal, we have a huge advantage at Auburn. Huge. They want the kids want to stay. And they don't want to stay just because of me. I guarantee you. A lot easier coaches to play for than me. They want to stay here because they love Auburn. And Auburn family. That's facts.
You talked about Jahni earlier. Obviously, he had a great season. Is it a realistic possibility that he could be here next year? I mean, could that happen?
Sure. Absolutely. It's one of his options would be to come back. Yeah.
NIL would be a huge part of that, right?
Well, you've got to weigh what, you know, what the NIL could be versus what, you know, being a two-way contract or a second round or Europe or things like that. And that's something I think his family is in the process of doing right now with Jahni.
So that was Bruce Pearl today in his press conference wrapping up the season. Had some interesting thoughts in there, some interesting takes as well. We'll take a late break here in hour number one, come back, have a quick segment, talk about what he had to say, and then we'll get to Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC after that. 334-321-1390 back after this on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at espnau.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
All right, back for a quick segment here on the show. That was the presser was a little bit longer than I thought it was going to be, but I think it was good stuff. It was good content. It was good to hear what BP had to say as the season comes to a close for Auburn basketball. There are some heated takes about what he had to say today, and still people fired up about how the whole Chad Baker-Mazzara situation has been handled. Here's some snippets from a text I got earlier during that interview. Is basically, look, I get it, and this is what somebody said, that I get it, Chad Baker made a mistake, and I'd be mad if I was his parents that he did it, but there needs to be some accountability on Bruce Pearl for not dealing with the issue that the entire fan base could see barreling towards them all year. He said, this is not okay. Why was this not addressed when this happened multiple times? And this person also says, I understand second chances, but why did this happen? Why not get on him before something like this happened, more significant than what we had already seen with technical fouls and jawing and things like that? So, look, some people are still fired up about it, and some people are still not happy with what happened and how it was handled, and I get it. I totally do. But you heard Bruce Pearl right there said, leave my son alone. We've handled it. We're moving on. So take that for what you will. Coming up, Chris Gordy, host of the Locked On SEC podcast. He'll join us. We'll talk all things Southeastern Conference. This was a quick segment, but I promise a big full segment coming up when we come back here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
What's up, guys? This is Uncle Keith, founder of Uncle Keith's Red Sauce, Southern-style salsa, born in our Alabama kitchen, now found in local stores like Kroger, Publix, and Piggly Wiggly. Uncle Keith's Red Sauce goes well with burritos, nachos, taco night, and that old faithful chips and salsa. Order and ship nationwide to your friends and family at UncleKeithsRedSauce.com. Remember, y'all, that's UncleKeithsRedSauce.com. It's the best darn salsa you'll ever eat. It's good, y'all.
Curb Technologies helps make your job look easy. Utilizing three important components for a successful project, Curb Technologies follows through with service, customization, and quality assurance. An industry leader in roof curb applications, Curb Technologies partners with national manufacturers like Carrier, Lennox, and Johnson Controls. For more information, give Curb Technologies a call at 334-826-9538. Curb Technologies, they make your project look easy.
Folks, buying a home or property can be the biggest investment of your life. Making sure you have a clear title and the closing go as smoothly as possible is as important to the Wisdom Firm LLC as it is to you. The Wisdom Firm's licensed to close any property purchase in the entire state of Alabama. With offices on Bent Creek Drive in Auburn and Highway 49 South at beautiful Lake Martin, the Wisdom Firm has you covered. Give Travis and his team a call at 826-0722 or check them out at auburnlegal.com for all of your real estate closing needs. The next time you purchase real estate, tell your lender or agent, close us at the Wisdom Firm. The representation is made by the quality of legal services is greater than the quality of legal services made by other attorneys.
Hey everybody, this is Jacob Goins.
And I'm Uncle T-Bone.
Tune in to On the Line throughout the week as Uncle T-Bone joins me in the studio to discuss the latest news in Auburn athletics, plus the biggest stories around the country.
On the Line, weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. with me, Uncle T-Bone.
And me, Jacob Goins.
On the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
That's On the Line, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4 p.m. here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Are on the line with Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7, and that's the motto that this guy takes as well every single day on Locked On SEC, and he's done it quite a few times on this program as well. It's been a couple of weeks since we've talked to him. Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC. What's going on, Chris? How are you, man? Happy opening day.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually here. I am. I'm outside the ballpark here at Minute Maid.
Yes.
Astros Yankees going on inside, but stepped outside to catch up with you because, as we know, in my world, no matter where I'm at, SEC football is always going to be number one ahead of everything else.
That's right. Well, there's so much to talk about on the football side of things, and that's where we're going to get to eventually. But we got a couple of basketball things to address, some baseball and then football as well. But yeah, on location there for Astros and Yankees, probably the best opening weekend series across the league.
Yeah, no doubt. It's pretty big. I mean, it's funny. I was just walking through the hallway of the press box, and there was Joe Girardi, the former manager, he's doing some media now. Alex Rodriguez walked past me. Michael Kay. I mean, when the Yankees are in town, they bring out all the big dogs. So kind of cool seeing that. But it's always fun, man. Even to the most casual baseball fans, opening day is always like you got to at least put it on. I know in your neck of the woods, what you probably got a ton of Braves fans. You probably got some Astros, Red Sox, Cubs fans, but. It's funny, my buddy is a Braves fan who lives in New Orleans, and he's making the road trip to go see them on opening weekend.
Awesome, man. Well, yes, it's very exciting for MLB opening day, but we have you on this show in particular to talk all things Southeastern Conference. Sweet 16 in action tonight. Two SEC teams will be in part of it. You'll have Alabama taking on North Carolina tonight, and then Creighton and Tennessee tomorrow. Chris, those are the two best games of the Sweet 16, in my opinion. But what's your overall breakdown, since it's been a little bit since we've talked to you, your breakdown of what happened with the Southeastern Conference in the NCAA tournament?
Well, it's funny. You know, the first couple games, like I figured Mississippi State was going to lose to Michigan State. Everybody kept talking about Tom Izzo's record against, when he's a lower seed, like he's, he makes a tournament every year, like literally every year Tom Izzo makes it. So I just thought that was a bad draw for Mississippi State. I figured they'd lose that one. Florida losing their big man in the SEC championship game, I figured, that was going to hurt them. They lost, by two to Colorado. So a couple of those were kind of, they weren't that big of, who's going around going, oh, Florida got beat. Like, no one cares. the big ones were Kentucky and Auburn, right? I mean, those were the two that, Calipari's been up against it. You were a three seed. You're playing Oakland. Who's no one even, who, if you took a poll of 100 people, could they even name that Oakland is actually a school in Michigan, not in Oakland, California? So
they can't now.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then there's this goofball looking dude who's 25 years old, who's such a 3-point specialist. He literally only takes threes. I think that's the craziest thing ever. But, they pull the upset off of Kentucky, and okay, yeah, you got some trash talk there. And then Auburn, whatever the hell that was against Yale, like, good Lord, Yale? Come on, Bruce Pearl, we're paying you way too much to go lose to Yale. So that was, those were kind of the two big ones. And then everybody started in, what was it, Friday night? Oh, the SEC's 1-5 and all this. Well, then Tennessee takes care of business. Alabama takes care of business. And, lo and behold, once we hit the Sweet 16, we had two teams in the Sweet 16. We almost had a third if A&M could have pulled it out in overtime against Houston, who was, one of the one seeds. So, at the end of the weekend, I looked back and said, hey, the SEC did pretty well. I think they got just as many teams in the Sweet 16 as the Big 12 and the Big 10 did. So I'd say maybe they're doing something right there. But, it's going to be interesting. And like you mentioned, these two games, like I think Tennessee and Alabama can both win. I think North Carolina, what I've seen from them, they're pretty good. But, this is where, Alabama's kind of playing with house money. Like, nobody's picking them to win. So, and Nate Oates is a good coach. So, I feel like they can almost kind of go into this game, like I said, playing with house money, come in loose. They had an awful first half offensively against Grand Canyon State. If they come out and hit some shots, they could be in this game until the very end. So, yeah, I hate to be super SEC homer, but I'm picking both teams to advance to the Elite Eight.
Okay. Well, look, I've said the same thing that Alabama should have. They've done exactly what they were supposed to do, and some would argue that they've exceeded expectations this season by making it to the Sweet 16. And hey, shout out to Rick Barnes, man. He overcame his own curse. Tennessee actually winning some tournament games, and that's a really good Creighton team they have tomorrow night.
Yeah, and somebody pointed this out to me. They said, Tennessee's been in this spot before, and obviously they've never been to a Final Four, but the crazy part is, I think they said, Rick Barnes, how many times has he been in this position with the player that, the SEC player of the year and a guy who's literally a Naismith finalist? Like, Dalton Connect is that good. And so, I'd have to go back through his years at Texas. I'm sure he had a couple of players that he, I'm sure, Kevin Durant, LaMarcus Aldridge, those kind of guys. But in his time at Tennessee, he's never had a player this good as as Dalton Connect. So, yeah, that's where I say maybe the jinx is off, you know, and I think Tennessee can get it done. Man, it would be something. The crazy part is they're playing good defense and the offense is good. Normally, in years past, the offense has been okay, but the defense has been elite. This year they got both. So that's where I think Tennessee could pull it off. And Creighton's fine. I mean, if they lose to Creighton, there's no shame in that. But I don't know, man. I just keep getting this vibe that this is the year that Rick Barnes – when everybody starts piling on with the jokes, Rick Barnes, they might as well just have him coach from November through February because he can't coach in March. Well, and the more and more people started making those jokes, the more and more Rick Barnes starts to win. So we'll see what happens.
Well, look, Auburn fans can't say a whole lot. It's been a brutal week here on the airwaves. I can't lie to you, man. Thankfully, we had a few days between Friday and Monday before we actually got on the radio to talk about it because, man, it's been an adventure, a roller coaster, if you will, especially with Bruce Pearl's comments today and just the fan base going insane, and rightfully so. And so it's now, where do we go from here for Auburn? Two teams that are not in the SEC that I want to get your thoughts on quickly, though. UConn and the team from your neck of the woods, Houston. I mean, the two betting favorites to win it all. The SEC's got to go through them somehow.
Yeah, no doubt. And Houston, my biggest concern is still the offense. Man, they play the best defense in the country. Nobody plays better, tougher, hard-nosed defense than Houston. Now, A&M did do some things to expose them in that second half. I mean, they got some shots and tough shots too. I mean, they were contested shots, but they were able to score on Houston in the second half. And they had LJ Crier fouled out in regulation. They go to overtime. I was like, oh, that might come back to kill them. But there's a reason why I just mentioned Dalton Connect's a Naismith finalist. Jabal Shedd is also a Naismith finalist, and that guy has been doing nothing but winning since he's been there at Houston all 4 years. I mean, they've been making deep tournament runs every year. So they got the pedigree. Again, the offense just kind of scares me a little bit. I think UConn, look, we know they're good. My biggest concern with them is, man, it is so hard to repeat. You know, how many times throughout the history of college basketball has a team repeated? Obviously, Billy Donovan had one of the greatest assemblings of Corey Brewer and Joakim Noah and Torian Green. I mean, it was like one of the greatest Florida teams of all time when they did it. But it's hard to do it, man. So I don't know. I'm out on UConn. We'll see what happens. There's going to be some upsets this weekend, but isn't it so funny how the tournament works? I always say it's like this. Weekend one, I want all the upsets, right? I want Cinderella here, Cinderella there.
Yes.
By weekend two, I want the Blue Bloods. I want all the Blue Bloods to get through because I want, you know, I want an Elite Eight and a Final Four that's got all the Blue Bloods. And I say that living here in Houston, where last year we got FAU and San Diego State and Miami. It was like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Like, no, give me the North Carolinas, the Dukes, and those kind of teams. But I think Houston matches up well with Duke, and we'll see what happens with UConn. This time of year, you never want to say definitively, you know, I think this team's absolutely going to win. But man, Kelvin Sampson has been awesome. And to your point, real quick on Bruce Pearl, you know, as bad as it is, you know what else we could be talking about today? We could be talking about John Calipari being let go from Kentucky, and Bruce Pearl's agent talking with the University of Kentucky. That's what we could be talking about today. So if you're an Auburn fan, maybe you look on the bright side a little bit.
Well, that's where I was going next was it seems like there's some big news around – well, not seems like. There is some big news around the SEC. Calipari is confirmed staying in Lexington, which at this point is wild to me. I think that man will die inside of Rupp Arena. And then also it seems like Eric Musselman is back at Arkansas, according to a video they put out on social media. Your thoughts on those two guys staying in this conference?
Yeah, you can't get rid of Mus after one bad year. After his track record speaks that he's a really good coach. You look at it, you have the meeting at the end of this year, you say, hey, what happened? How do we fix this moving forward and all that? But you're not moving on from Mus after 1 year. And obviously there was some rumblings that maybe he had the wandering eye. Maybe
that's what I
looking
thought.
Because what happens is when you have a season like this, you start to feel underappreciated because everybody starts bad-mouthing you. It's like, wait a minute, where were you when we were making these Sweet 16 runs every year? Like, oh, like that, we have one down year, suddenly you're jumping ship on me? So, yeah, it's a smart thing to do. His track record says, you know, he's a great coach, and so you stick with him. Look, the portal is hit and miss. I mean, you're gonna have guys who don't pan out. I mean, look at Auburn football last year. There was some guys in that group that weren't what they were cracked up to be. And
appreciate that one, Chris.
But But I'm just, you know, I'm just saying,
right.
Like, it happens.
You're absolutely
and
right.
That's what, and five-star recruits, too. I mean, Kentucky goes through it every year. They have a kid, you know, DJ Wagner was fine, but DJ Wagner was hyped up as, like, this dude's going to be the next coming. And it's like, sometimes they're not all that right out of the gates. And so, yeah, it was just one of those weird years for Musselman. The smart move is stick with him. Now, if they have another bad year next year, then we got to talk. But I think Arkansas smart to hang tough with him. And the Calipari thing, ultimately, look, I think the buyout was just, it was a lot. And I think, you know, that everybody was like, oh, they can afford it. You could spread the money out over time. The thing is, Calipari's an awesome, like, nobody recruits better than him. Nobody's a better motivator than him. When he's got to clap his hands and tell a team, let's go, let's go. Where he is most efficient is, unfortunately, one of the biggest parts of coaching, and it's X's and O's. He's never been a good X's and O's coach, but he's always had good assistants who can get the job done. And to be honest, a lot of times talent just superseded. You know, sometimes when you got the five stars all out there, the talent just shows through, and those guys hit some big shots, and you win some games. But, man, one tournament win in the last five seasons for Calipari, they got rid of Tubby Smith because he had two seasons where they were one and done in the tournament. I mean, it's crazy to look back at it and say, like, this is what Kentucky's become, but it's a very awkward situation. He's going to get one more year to turn this thing around. Mitch Barnhart, we know, already doesn't like him. They already had to do a whole awkward sit-down for their local TV affiliate yesterday. But, I don't know, being married to my wife is a Kentucky alum, and she loves John Calipari from her time there. Even she's out on him. And so I don't know how you have booster events and ask these fans to come and pay big money and, hey, let's get excited for another season of Kentucky basketball when all they're going to be, you know, doing is left in disappointment again. If anything barring a deep tournament run for Kentucky next year, or I'll say this, at least you got to get out of the first weekend. If Cal doesn't get out of the first weekend again next year, he's got to go, man. I mean, the game is passing him by. There's too many good head coaches that are in-game schemers. And go look at, you know, all the teams that are in the Sweet 16. You got Nate Oates out there who's a mastermind at drawing up plays in crunch time. There's a tons of different coaches like that, and unfortunately Calipari's not in that group.
Chris Gordy, host of the daily SEC podcast called Locked On SEC. You can find it on YouTube or the audio version wherever you get your podcast. I know I'm keeping you a couple more minutes before we let you get back inside of the ballpark. On the football side of things, spring practice underway. You've got guys getting arrested once again in Athens, which seems to be a regular occurrence now. And so many storylines across the SEC and across SEC football. What's caught your ear and caught your eye over the last couple of days, couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's coming back to the quarterbacks. And obviously, you know, somebody posed me the question the other day. They said, if you could go to any, you know, spring game, you can only pick one, where would you go? And I don't know why I keep coming back to Alabama. Like, Jalen Milroe is just, it's so fascinating to me. Like, either this kid is going to take that next leap and he's going to be awesome and he's going to look Bryce Young-esque, or it's going to be more of the same and ups and downs, and Alabama's going to lose some tough games, and where do they go from there? And obviously, Kalen DeBoer, the fans are not patient there in Tuscaloosa. So I don't know why Alabama just continues to intrigue me. I got to watch some highlights yesterday of Oklahoma's spring game and watching Jackson Arnold throw the football, man. And Oklahoma's got some dudes. Like, I know we're not really thinking of them as an SEC team yet, but they are going to score some points. Their defense is going to be lacking. I think they're going to give up a lot of points. But Oklahoma's very intriguing. Texas, talking to my buddy who was there at camp, said, you know, everything looks good. Quinn Ewers gelling with the new receivers they brought in. And, again, high expectations for them. And, and then, of course, you know, the places where coaches are on the hot seat. South Carolina, you know, nobody's saying Shane Beamer's on the hot seat, but I keep putting them there because, you know, look, you went 5-7 last year. You missed a bowl game after getting everybody all excited and recruiting well and all this. And if he has another disappointing season and misses a bowl game, like, I just don't know how you keep rolling with that at South Carolina. You get the wandering eye and say, we might have to make a change here. So I was reading reports on him that they've been leaning a lot on these transfers. They brought in a transfer running back from North Texas that's basically carrying the workload this spring because Rocket Sanders has been banged up from Arkansas. Go figure. Guy can't stay healthy. But, you know, so a lot of the transfers, they brought in a lot of defensive ends and defensive linemen through the transfer portal. I'm looking at these guys, a guy from Pitt, a guy from here, it's like a lot of dudes, you like names you don't know, but when we see them in action, it's going to be a bunch of different new guys on that defensive line for South Carolina. And that's where they've been lacking the last couple of years, is in the trenches, O-line and D-line. And then Florida. I mean, all eyes are on Billy Napier to get this thing turned around. And
once again,
he is on the hottest of hot seats. And it doesn't help when Princely Imanmielen over at Ole Miss is out there saying, "Yeah, I mean, at Florida, they just told me, yeah, just go rush the passer and let your talent shine through." He's like, "Here,
wasn't
at Ole Miss,
that
I'm
insane?"
He's like, "I'm actually getting coached up here. Pete Golding actually knows what the hell he's doing." And so, yeah, not a good look for Florida.
No, it's a terrible look across the board. And man, it's so crazy to hear you start talking. When I ask you about SEC teams, you start throwing out Texas and Oklahoma. I mean, it's just, that's where we are now, man.
Hey, I did an interview earlier this week where the guy said, "All right, before we let you go, how do you see this thing playing out? Who's going to win the East and the West?" And I said, "The hell are you talking about? There's no East and West anymore." And the guy's like, "That's right." He goes, "Man, I got to train my brain to get in that mode." And it's weird for all of us. It's going to take a lot of getting used to.
He asked you to pick a pick for the conference in March? Man, that's impossible.
Well, he was just asking, like, he was breaking down the East. He's like, "We know Georgia's the team to beat in the East." I said, "There's no East.
There's
it's
no
all
more.
Open. Yeah, it's all wide open now."
Oh, that breaks my brain, man. That hurts to think about. That's a long way away. It's not that far, though, with SEC spring football happening right now. Spring games over the next few weeks, we'll be talking to you about those. SEC baseball as well. I know it's a big weekend, but we want to let you get out of here and get back into the game. We got to get to our break. Plug your pod. Plug everything. Tell people where they can find you with Locked On SEC, man.
Yeah, just search Locked On SEC wherever you get your podcasts. I've been talking a lot about the John Calipari stuff this week. I don't know why.
You've been crushing it.
We've been seeing football numbers. One of our videos the other day was 10,000 views talking John Calipari. I'm like, all right, whatever. But, no, it's been a lot of fun. We'll get back to football conversation more next week. We had the Arkansas quarterback, Kalen Green, on the show a couple weeks ago. Next week we're going to have a special guest, a current Tennessee Volunteer, going to join us. And then some other special guests coming down the pike. So make sure you check that out, Locked On SEC. And I'll give you a little tidbit real quick on the way out. I heard an interview with David DeLucci the other day. Of course, former SEC player and covers the SEC, and he said, "Those at Auburn, stay patient." That he said that the Auburn baseball team is very talented. He said they've just been kind of having a little bit of not great luck, and he said Auburn's going to shine through here these next couple weeks. So let's see if they do it.
Well, they're in the midst of playing the hardest schedule in the country, so patience is has to be a thing. And they've got number 4 A&M before they just come back home for Tennessee next week. So nothing super crazy. Hey man, we appreciate you as always. Great to hear from you, brother, and have a great rest of your week. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
All right, thanks, man.
That's Chris Gordy, Locked On SEC. Check it out wherever you get your podcast and on YouTube as well. He's there for opening day in Houston between the Astros and the Yankees. We got to take our final break. We'll come back and wrap it all up here on the Thursday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Winding down very quickly here on the Thursday edition of On the Line. Been a jam-packed show today. We talked to Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network back in hour number one. Just got off the phone with Chris Gordy. Man, I could talk to him for hours, and he's got so much to say with so many teams that he covers for Locked On SEC. So be sure you go and check that out, your daily SEC podcast. So go check that out as well. And then we also had Bruce Pearl's press conference from today. I've had some juicy stuff in there as well. And also talked Sweet 16. Those games begin tonight. Little Auburn baseball begins tonight as well. If you're Auburn and Butch Thompson, go get a win. Just get one on the road in the SEC. That's what we say, right? Just go get a win and then come back home for Tennessee next week. And as you heard Chris say, just be patient, Auburn fans, when it comes to Auburn baseball. And you know what? Maybe that's what it takes for Auburn athletics. I don't know. I feel like we say that all the time. Just be patient, right? Things will work out for this fan base, right? Things will work out for Auburn athletics. It's fine. Just be patient. No, I'm just kidding. Auburn baseball tonight. You've got Sweet 16 basketball tonight. Alabama taking on North Carolina. I'm taking the Tar Heels, but I don't feel good about it. Maybe that's just me hedging my bet. I don't know. But great stuff going on tonight. Hey, tomorrow we will be live out at Fairway Auto Brokers on East Glen Avenue across from John Deere. I know you've heard the promos running. We've hyped it up some. Come on and check us out tomorrow, 2 to 4 for us, and then 4 to 6 for the drive. We'll be live at Fairway Auto Brokers on East Glen Avenue. Going to have giveaways. I think they're having some food cooking out there. They're going to have their tent sale going on. If you're in the market for a new vehicle, may as well come check us out at Fairway Auto Brokers. We'll be live on location tomorrow, so come check us out. We'll wrap up the week. Uncle T-Bone will be with me. You never know who's going to show up when we go on location. You saw how we do it at Plaza Bar, so come hang out with us tomorrow at Fairway Auto Brokers as well. We'll wrap up the week, get into the weekend, talk about Sweet 16, a potential Elite Eight matchups as well, and into Auburn baseball, Major League Baseball, so many things happening. So tomorrow is going to be a lot of fun. Thank you so much for being here. Until tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.